You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network, your home for hockey talk covering every team in the NHL. New episodes every Monday. Download at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.
This is the Leafs Guy Podcast. Here's your host, Jim Taddy.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Leafs Guy, episode 13. Jim Taddy with you. I'm just going to tease you here and tell you that our guests today are Bill Waters, former Leafs assistant general manager, and the voice, the longtime voice of the Leafs, Joe Bowen, will stop by as well. We're thrilled about that. You've heard us talk about DraftKings, the leader in daily fantasy sports, and how payday can become every day by entering their contest with huge cash prizes up for grabs. This week is jam-packed with action ranging from basketball to golf, and DraftKings has plenty of ways for you to have a front-row seat to all the action. Making a lineup on DraftKings adds excitement to every night. It is simple to do. Draft your lineup and feel the sweat like you've never before felt it. Every moment means more with a DraftKings lineup on the ice, the court, the putting green. You know what I'm saying. It's simple. Each player has a salary associated with drafting them. Assemble a lineup of players while staying under the salary cap and then sit back and watch your points pile up. DraftKings has paid out over $7 billion to users across all sports. DraftKings is the leader in daily fantasy sports, so there's no better place to get in all the action. Now you know how to play. Download the DraftKings app and sign up using the code THPN. New users will get a free entry with their first deposit. That's code THPN to get a free entry with your first deposit. Only at DraftKings. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. All right, let's get to the hockey story. So the Leafs now sit at 14-4-2. Their fourth regulation loss was Monday night, shutout on home ice by the Calgary Flames. This doesn't happen often, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, but it did happen on Monday night. The thing to remember here is it's only four regulation losses, and I can rhyme them right off. Monday night against Calgary, a week ago against Montreal, earlier against Edmonton, and at the very start of the season against Ottawa. When you have played 20 games and only have four regulation losses, that's something to be very, very proud of. What's troublesome is the Leaf injury list. Going into the game last night, Muzzin out with some sort of a bone fracture in his face, stopped the puck with it the other night in Montreal. Hyman out, took a shot in the skate in the left leg, so that may be troublesome. Thornton out with a daily maintenance problem we're not aware of. Anderson, the goalie, same thing. And, of course, add that to the other goaltender, Campbell and Wayne Simmonds, and you've got an injury list of six. Now, don't know if it's going to be six going into the game on Wednesday night, but think about this. The schedule ahead, Saturday, flying out to Edmonton to play the Oilers for the first of three in Edmonton, followed by two more in Vancouver. So maybe you want to err on the side of caution Wednesday night and maybe not dress a player or two and not rush them back, because that's a grueling road trip. If you want an example of what the difference is between the Leafs Saturday night and Monday night, just circle a 5-on-3. 5-on-3 Saturday at Montreal, the Bell Center, the Leafs score in the 5-on-3. And then when it goes to 5-on-4, they score again. And in that game, that sort of set the pace for what was going to happen. Those are the first two goals of the game. And even though Montreal rallied to tie it at 2, the Leafs really set the tone on that 5-on-3. Now, last night, Monday night against Calgary, they had a 5-on-3. And we understand that Hyman and Thornton aren't there. That 5-on-3 looked, I mean, it looked awful. That's what I'm trying to say. It looked awful. There was, you know, people weren't moving around. The image that we talked about so many times on Leafs Guide in the weeks before this was how Matthews on a power play would peel off like Brett Hull, one-timer and in. They couldn't get him the puck in the 5-on-3 in the Monday night game. Looked very, very static. So, you know, that's an issue for the team to sort of work on. And that was sort of an indicator as to why the Leafs couldn't score last night. They had plenty of opportunities, just couldn't cash in, and maybe you need to work a little harder. And certainly the Calgary goals were opportunistic, but I take nothing away from the Flames in a 3-0 win on the road. That's impressive for them. Nylander was troublesome again last night. He'll pop up in our Yes Guy, No Guy Awards, heavy in the No Guy based on the result. And John Tavares, a going concern as well, and he's going to pop up in the Yes Guy, No Guy Awards. Let's now go to our first guest, former assistant Leafs general manager, Bill Waters.
The winter Montreal on Saturday, just an awful Monday night, but so many people out of the lineup. What are your thoughts?
Well, you have to recognize that there's some pretty talented players there, but when there's nobody on the ice to go get them the puck, it's not as easy to keep scoring goals. I mean, the Matthews thing, you know, it was almost like clockwork, and that was because Joe Thornton was out there. And Joe Thornton gets the puck, and he can pass it. That's a lot of skill on one guy. So I think they missed Thornton a lot more than they thought they would. The fact that they had a bad game isn't fair to Calgary. Calgary wanted to win that game a lot more than the Leafs did. And I just felt it was almost the Leafs' turn to lose because everything had gone so well for them. I was disappointed that Matthews couldn't continue his streak, but not disappointed that he didn't score a goal or get an assist. The guy's got to take a breath. And my annoyance still remains the same. They disrupted the first line because of injury, of course, to put Tavares on it. What did it accomplish? The first line became Tavares' line. That means nothing. And it meant nothing on the second line. They got to sit down with John Tavares and take the films and show him what he's doing or what he isn't doing. $11 million invested in a player who contributes nothing to Marner and Matthews. I'm disappointed in John Tavares. I kind of like him because he's a nice young man, but boy, oh boy, I didn't think that his career would come to an end 3 years into that 7-year deal because they're going to be choking for a long time on that one.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it was noticeable. It doesn't seem to play with energy. I don't know how to describe it. It just, and that's not how he started the season. He started the season looking sharp and upbeat, and now I don't know if he's playing hurt or whatever. It's hard to understand. And if you throw Nylander in with him, which you have to because most of the time they're a combo, that's a pretty disappointing chunk of money, isn't it?
Well, and John, you're sick. The line was fourth line or third line. I can differentiate now because I have to call the Tavares line the second line, but it's not the second line. And they're getting scoring opportunities. And Tavares isn't even coming close. And I'm afraid, as you've been analyzed, that he may not be well. He won't be playing with an injury. I don't think that would be the case. But there's something wrong with John Tavares. And let's give him that. He's a better player than what we've seen in the past 3 or 4 weeks. And their best bet is to sit him down, say, why don't you take 2 weeks off, and we'll see how you feel when you come back. Because they have to address a very serious problem. That is that John Tavares might be at the end of the road. That's a bit of a jump in faith, but based on how he's playing, there's something wrong with him.
Yeah, it just doesn't look the same. And you know, they went out of their way to put him on the top line, disrupted the second line or his line. Maybe they outthought themselves. I don't know. It just didn't. It wasn't a bad effort. It's, you know, I think the lasting memory is the 5-on-3 power play that looked absolutely useless.
Oh, that, I said to my wife when we were watching, I said, this is the TSN turning point. And it was in spades. That game was over right then. And as you say, they put Tavares in, they disrupt all four lines. Why wouldn't they just move Spezza to the right wing and leave Marner and Matthews together, left wing, or, you know, whatever wing Marner wants to play?
Yeah,
but I know Spezza would have done better than Tavares.
Yeah.
I don't even have to look at that, especially when he's on the power play. Although, as I recall, he was on the 5-on-3. They couldn't get the puck out of Marner and Matthews' corner. Matthews was in the – I mean, Matthews wasn't even in scoring position most of the night because they were playing him pretty tough. And then you've got a kid like Tkachuk, who, if you're going to play him at all, you've got to box him out. You've got to get him away from the front of the net. And they're out there patting him on the seat, patting him on the side of the shoulder, They're doing everything but box him out, and he gets a nice tip in to make it 2-0. And that was another TSN turning point, because each one slowed the Leafs down another pace.
Yeah, I agree. In fact, it seemed that each one happened after a Leaf miscue or a failed scoring opportunity at the other end. So the timing of those Calgary goals was lethal. And, you know, I have to say that any coincidence or any resemblance between the power play on Monday night and Saturday night is purely coincidental. I mean, it just didn't look the same. They weren't fluid. They weren't moving around. They looked tired, actually, didn't they?
Yes. Yeah, they were. They played like a team that wasn't very confident of each other. And I think there must have been players that were on the ice a lot that knew that they missed Joel. You know, you hear Marner or Matthews talk about Joel. It's terms of adoration. And that's not because he's a nice person, because he is. But that's because he's a hell of a hockey player. And he can really play when he's got a man advantage. He can go get the puck. He can pass the puck. And if you want to put it in the net, he'll do that for you, too. The fact that he's 41 is just coincidental.
Yep, I would agree with that. I like your point about Spezza, because that's what I thought after the game. When I was doing the post-game show, I looked at the lineup and I thought Spezza would have been the guy I would have tried up there, and I would have left Tavares where he was, and I may have shortened the bench, you know, just because you've got those guys
that
know how to play.
And the other guy they missed, of course, was the big winger who got shot in the foot.
Oh, Hyman, yeah.
I mean, Hyman is one of the most underrated players on the Leafs by a country mile.
Oh.
I mean, he disrupts play. He gets the puck back for them. There it was. They didn't have anybody doing that. They still had the Fancy Dan guys. And if they can't see that it's time to move on from the Swede, well, then they're in trouble. They better get him out of there. He doesn't want to play. He can't handle the pressure. I think he thinks that the Scotiabank Center is full of people who don't like him. That's not the case. There's nobody there. Play your game. It's a wonderful opportunity. But he plays like, I don't want to be here. I want to go with my brother in Chicago or wherever he is. I don't really know. But anyway, the fact remains that was another waste of money and time that combined with the Tavares misguiding on that signing, they've got $18 million tied up in two players who can't play with each other and can't play with anybody else. What are you going to say? That's a problem that Dubas has to address and just let it go, or get rid of one of them. Can't get rid of Tavares. So you might as well try on the other guy.
Well, the Nylander caper, as I call it, for me goes way, way back. And first of all, I just want to circle back to Saturday night when he was benched and the coach said he didn't like how he was playing and they had the lead. And you have to remember the week started with that giveaway game to Ottawa. So, I mean, it was pretty clear to everybody on that roster that there's a certain way you're going to play when you have the lead. Why he drifted off the plan is beyond me. But I go back to the moment they drafted Auston Matthews, in my opinion, William Nylander became obsolete, because you remember this. When Nylander was drafted, he was the guy, but he got replaced by the real guy. That's when that should have been dealt with.
Absolutely. And that, I mean, you look at the talent that they would have at center ice. I don't think they'd be much better off, but Tavares was superfluous. If they wanted to do something, they should have just left William where he is and Matthews where he is, and your first two lines have young centermen who can play, and they got responsibility, and I think you might get more out of them than having Tavares skating around and disappointing not only himself but every Leaf fan in captivity. It's a reminder of bad player appraisal, bad salary management. There's more to this than the coach trying to make them all happy.
Oh, I agree, but I'm just going to go back to that. If you drafted William Nylander as center, and you're not going to play him at center, I mean, that's the Galchenyuk story. I mean, you miscast these guys, you wrecked them. I mean, Nylander's far from wrecked, but if you decide he's not your number one center, and Matthews is, and you don't want to play him at number two, you got to move him out.
That's right. That's right. And that's the sad part of it. You got to admit the mistake of a $7 million salary, which is what his agent asked for in the beginning of the negotiations and got at the end with a trip over to Europe in between by the general manager, who forgot to bring his measuring tape to see if he was in, if he was fit, and he wasn't. He showed up on a Monday, let's say it was the 3rd of December, and he was playing for Babcock on the 4th. And he never played a lick the rest of that season. When I say he didn't play worth a lick for the rest of that season, he should not have been on that team until he spent a month in Rochester and they got him in shape. But oh no, they're playing favorites, and that's fine. But you, when your favorite has turned on you, you better get him out of your class.
Yeah, that was embarrassing. I remember that well. He was out of shape, and nobody could figure out why he was even playing that game, but he was, and the whole season pretty well went with him. He didn't amount to much then. But, you know, here we are back at the scene of the crime again, and I just, for me, I've got nothing against the guy. I think, you know, when I grade my NHL players, they're all NHL caliber. It's about the fit, and I don't think the fit for Nylander is here anymore.
No, I don't think it is, and the fit for Nylander will be refined once he leaves Toronto, because you learn a lot from watching this kid play. He's very fragile. His confidence is such that it better be going in the right direction all the time, or he has none. And what are you going to get for him? I don't know. He hasn't done much. You're hoping you get a half-decent defenseman. Maybe you'll get a 5 guy. Maybe a 4 guy. I don't know. Maybe a high price guy. But they're not. It's not what they could have gotten 3 years ago. And the Tavares situation is the worst, Jim, because they have to address that. It's apparent to all of us, let alone the pros that are watching him, something is wrong. And if he hasn't got anything physically wrong with him, they better talk to him and find out what's disturbing him. Because he's not playing. As you said, he started the season off with a roar.
Yep.
And he was out there last night. Matthews never touched the puck. He couldn't get it to him.
Yeah, it was just an awful look. It just didn't look right. I don't know what to say about it. You see him in different roles, and the coach was praising his defensive play, which is something you do when an offensive guy isn't scoring but not hurting you, right?
Yeah. Hmm. Well, coach, a rule of thumb is if you've got a guy you have to replace, don't disrupt anything other than the position that you have to replace. And keep your second line, keep your third line, move a guy from the fourth line, like Spezza, to play, and see how he does. And if the score's 3-0 with 2 minutes to go, you'll know that you didn't lose anything, because they weren't in that game last night at all. And that's too bad, because they certainly could have beaten them, as you witnessed when they were out there twice in Calgary. But something has to be done other than praising the boys and being careful how you make your switches in your lineup in case you offend some of them. That's what Sheldon Keefe's going to have to address. He should be making those decisions based on his background, not on what Tavares is going to think. Tavares is finished thinking. He's got to start playing.
Yeah, totally agree with that. Unfortunately for the Leafs, the injury list is now 6 deep, and it happens at a time, and we don't know who's going to be back on Wednesday night. Maybe some of them will be. But, you know, you go into that long haul, 3 games in Edmonton followed by 2 in Vancouver. That's not a trip for an injured hockey team.
No, not at all. And Edmonton's starting to put it together. They've always been a strong offensive threat. They've got Smith back in net, and that helps. So, no, the point's well made. They got 5 games that if they win 3 of them, it's been a great road trip, and anything from that down has just existed. So, and you know what? I never thought I'd say this, but they missed Muzzin last night. They missed the size. We're talking about boxing out. I mean, he just has to turn around and boxes you out. His shadow boxes you out. And he's on the ice all the time with Tkachuk. Oh, Tkachuk had a picnic. Nobody challenged him. He just got in front of the net and bothered the goaltender, and got a nice tip in. But you don't set up for a pea shooter and fire it right at his stick. And nobody put a hand on him, let alone cut off his stick. Got to do one or the other. You got to try and box him out, or at least prevent him from having full use of his stick. And when you do, and you got a shot like that, and a guy that can do it the way he can, you're sure one thing, it's a goal.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. We remember the team without Muzzin. We remember the team without Simmons. And we would have said back then that, you know, there's a lot of great talent here, but not enough of the right pieces. And it's just, it's kind of startling to me that after all these years, you know, Muzzin had to be acquired and Simmons had to be signed as a free agent. They really never drafted anybody like that, did they?
No. But that's, you can see what they draft.
Yeah.
When it's obvious that they don't need anybody to make the decision in the case of Matthews, they'll draft a highly skilled player against a quality personality type player who plays with some aggression and isn't a fighter, but he's a presence. And they've not drafted any of those people. And so now they've got a list of Matthias that can skate well and can do a lot of things. I'd have trouble putting the puck in the net when you need it. Last night, two breakaways on shorthanded play. Boy, oh boy, I'd have him killing a lot of penalties. He'd be out for every penalty. He's quick, and he loves to push forward with the puck on the chance of a breakaway, and he's got great breakaway speed to accommodate that. But playing him regularly is a waste of time. It's pretty hard to shovel the puck into the net.
Yeah, I mean, on those breakaways, if he could just put that about 4 inches higher, he'd have some great totals because he's
yeah.
Those aren't his first two breakaways shorthanded either.
Yeah, oh no, he was doing it right. I mean, they were, and it was surprising that he got one. Then when he got two, I thought, boy, this is becoming a habit, and it was. It was a habit he was getting them, and it was a habit he was missing them.
Well, Bill, appreciate it. Thanks very much.
And now it is my absolute pleasure to welcome to the Leafs Guy podcast the longtime voice of the Leafs, Mr. Joe Bowen. Joe, obviously the winning ways ended on Monday night against Calgary, but before that, that was a really nice stretch of really superb Maple Leaf hockey, and I think really defined who the Leafs are this year. Would you agree?
I think one of the things, certainly, Jimmy, that when the offseason arrived, and there's been all kinds of help from the media to tell management what this team needed. The biggest thing was to improve the defense core. The second was to add some size and some sandpaper to a lineup that really had very little pushback. And they went ahead and did that. The additions of Brody and Bogosian on the back end and the development of Justin Hall have been instrumental in playing better in their own end. They always had the offensive talent, but the addition of Wayne Simmons and Joe Thornton, I think, have been instrumental in giving them that added size and aggressiveness when they needed it. And I think that that has been a key component. Now, unfortunately, they've also run into injuries with a lot of those people. Jake Muzzin has gone for a bit of a period here with a broken bone, and Thornton's been in and out a little bit, and they lost Simmons. But I think that while they were together, they developed the continuity that they're going to play better defensively, and by playing better defensively and moving the puck better, they're creating a lot more offense. And obviously, Marner and Matthews have been the key components there. But they have lived off of that quite nicely, as well as their power play.
Yeah, I like what you said there. And sometimes people forget, like when you have the wish list, it's like we need a guy who can do this. Well, you may get that guy and he may not fit. What's important here is Thornton, Simmons, Brody, and Bogosian are perfect fits, aren't they?
They are. And you can go about trying and finding out, ooh, that didn't work. And having said that, you know, it's a different league when you play in the regular season than it is when you play in the postseason. I don't care who you are. The old Conn Smythe axiom of you can't beat them in the alley, you can't beat them on the ice. That may not hold true to be the Philadelphia Flyers of the Broad Street Bully era, but for your star players and your gifted players, you must make them feel comfortable. And I think being comfortable means that you must feel, they must feel protected. And I strongly feel this way. And the Leafs have never done that in the postseason. They've never had a team that would push back. And subsequently, the only guy that pushed back, they traded in Nazem Kadri. And I think since that trade, they've been trying to find that kind of player, that kind of individual that, if not striking fear into the hearts of men, will at least give people a second thought of taking liberties with some of the star players because, uh-oh, here comes the big fella off the bench. And Wayne Simmonds is going to provide that. And it's like having the atomic bomb. You don't have to drop it. You just have to have it. And that's something I think that the teams that you've seen go to the Stanley Cup and win have had that kind of aggressiveness and physicality that made their star players feel that much more comfortable.
And I was always a little concerned about how they would do that because this is a high skill, high pace team. Sometimes you could add those elements of roughness and truculence, if you will, and they won't be that fast. Like they won't think the game the way the rest of the Leafs do. That's important.
Did you ever use that word 5 years, 10 years ago? I had to look it up when he used it the first time.
I saw Muhammad Ali once be accused of being truculent, and he said, whatever that is, I am.
Exactly. Well, what the hell was your question now? No, you're right. It is something that is there in the sport. It is still a collision sport. You're going, and it's faster, and the collisions are more abrupt and probably more painful because of the speed and the size of these guys now in comparison to, say, the six-team league way back when. But you still have to have that. And, you know, some coaches relish it and go overboard with it, but the Boston Bruins are a perfect example of this. They've got that one line that is just absolutely out of this world. And then they have a lot of bangers and crashers and people who are not afraid to be first to the puck. Or if they're second to the puck, they're going to arrive in a real miserable mood. And, you know, the Leafs have people like that, like Zach Hyman is not going to be a fighter, but Zach Hyman finishes his check. And he wants to be first to the puck. And if it's going to be a tie, it's going to be a physical tie. Simmonds is the same way. I think we're finding other people that are kind of fitting into that mold a little bit. Even a Mikheyev, for instance. He's not going to fight anybody, but his size and physicality can lead to some turnovers and stuff. You wish he could just start scoring because he's getting more chances than Austin Matthews in the game. But those are the types of people that will turn games around, especially in the playoffs.
Yeah, totally agree. And what I like about Simmonds, and sometimes you don't appreciate a guy until he plays on the team that you're covering, is he just naturally has that aura that creates space. He doesn't have to slug anybody. He just takes up space at the top of the net. The net front is what we call it. And that's where he goes. It's like he's drawn there as a magnet. And all of a sudden, the Leafs have net front. They didn't have that before.
And that takes courage. You're going to get hacked and whacked and everything else. But if you're somebody like a Dave Andrechuk from past years,
yeah,
that's the office. And you've got to be and Simmonds isn't as good as Dave Andrechuk was at it, but he works at it. And that is going to the front of the net and tipping pucks. And I remember Dave Andrechuk used to drive Felix Potvin absolutely crazy because he wanted to stay after practice and have people shoot pucks and let him get his big frame in front of the net and deflect them. And you can see that in Wayne Simmonds. He's not got the softest hands in the world. He's not the most creative player in the world, but he knows where to go. He knows what he can do. And when he does get to the front of the net, he's going to be a miserable SOB. And he's also going to get an opportunity to probably either deflect the puck or gobble up a rebound and score goals. So that was part of it. We've lost him for a while. It'll be good to get him back in time for the second half of the season and for the playoffs. But I like the way this team has been put together at this particular point. I'm not so sure that there isn't another move that could be made, but we'll wait and see.
I really like the moves on the blue line just because it's been problematic for so many years, going back through many regimes. The fact that you could add Brody, who's just a perfect complement for Morgan Rielly, and Bogosian, a solid 5'6" guy, that's remarkable.
I'm still scratching my head about what happened in Buffalo. How this guy couldn't get on the ice and then ends up being Victor Hedman's partner and wins the Stanley Cup and has been nothing short of solid, steady defensive play for the Leafs at this particular point. So I don't know what happened in Buffalo. It obviously was a personality conflict of some sort, but it really is strange. He's solid. He understands his limitations. The other night, he kind of got out of his wheelhouse a little bit. He tried a Bobby Orr rush there for a little bit and got turned over. And I said to Tim Ralph, I said, good thing we don't see that going every day. He knows. I love one of the great lines that I heard was Bob Plager talking about when Doug Harvey was brought up from the minors to play with the St. Louis Blues in their playoff run playing against Philadelphia Flyers. It was game 7. And Scotty Bowman had brought in a Hall of Famer. He was 45 or 6 years old. I don't know how old it was. And Harvey turned to his young defense partner, Bob Plager, and he said, Mr. Plager, when I pass you the puck, under no circumstances are you to ever pass it back to me. Give it to one of those idiots up there and let them screw up. But we're getting the thing out of our end. Now, in this day and age of hockey, the defense moving back and forth a little bit, regrouping all the time. But I think Bogosian understands the premise. I'm not the rushing guy. I'm not the guy going end to end. Give me the puck. Give me an outlet. You're getting it. Let's get the hell out of here and go down into the other end of the rink.
Well, and one of the other features of all this is, I mean, we're talking about a team DNA or team identity, and you're calling this, so you're going to see this before anybody. The five-man unit is really in sync, and that wasn't always the case.
No, you're right, and but they're working well together. I think the forwards have bought into the idea of playing better defensively. And, you know, when your best player is your best defensive player, the room can't just sit back and say, well, you know, he's not doing it. Why would I have to do this? And I can recall vividly the conversations about Doug Gilmore, who was putting up 120 some odd points and the way he would play in both ends of the rink and play a lot. I mean, Pat Burns never got him off the ice. And I think it was in the Passion Returns, and it may have been Bill Waters being quoted saying, when your best player is your hardest working and your best defensive player, you have a role model that is stuck up on the wall in the dressing room that you have to measure up to. And I think that's a key component of what's happening here is the maturity and the development of the Leafs' best players. And both Marner and Matthews are very much akin to being good defensive players and responsible defensive players. And now with Marner and Matthews having some time on the penalty kill, Marner especially, it drives that point home that other people can't be taking a day off by not working hard or coming back hard to aid the defense and play well defensively, because you're going to get look down the bench and you're going to be pretty embarrassed because of what you see from what the best players on this team are doing, night in, night out.
Well, those two guys, I mean, they have matured. You notice it a lot with Austin Matthews, and I think Marner maybe matured a little earlier than Austin did in terms of what they're doing on the ice. When did you notice the difference in Austin Matthews? Because to me, this is like watching a flower bloom.
Yeah, it came in steps. as I recall, his first game was pretty good.
Yes.
From that point on, it's been all downhill because he never that.
Yeah.
But he was on the ice for the losing goal, right?
Yeah.
Scored four, and was more upset by that. So that was just, I think, giving you the tip of the iceberg of what was underneath to come. And it has certainly gone over the course of his career, another step, until this year, you know. And I love the fact that Sheldon Keefe said he's going to penalty kill for us. We're going to get him on the ice at times doing that. So these are important steps. But what you see, the way he retrieves pucks, his tenacity on the forecheck or even in the defensive zone. And I hearken people ask, you know, can you compare him to someone? And his active stick, how aggressive he is, how strong he is on the stick, and his ability to just little movements to steal the puck from someone reminds me so much of David Keon. Neither of them are running people through the end boards, but they have great positioning. They have good body positioning, good body size in the case of Matthews. But those hands are, they're sweet when he has the puck. They're very sweet and productive. But when he doesn't have the puck, he is just as good with his hands as anyone I've ever watched play. And it's a real treat. And every defenseman that he plays against has got to be just deathly afraid of that little choot. And he's got it again and looking for someone out in front of the net or back to the blue line and keeping offensive zone pressure going. And then all of a sudden that little move in the corner that got the puck back, he's off on the side with a one-timer and scoring a goal.
Well, you think of in our age group, you would think of Bossy, Curry. You knew that he was going to shoot, but you couldn't stop it. Certainly Brett Hull, now Ovi. And I would put Austin Matthews in that class, no problem.
I do too, Jimmy. But a lot of those guys that you mentioned, I think Matthews was better defensively.
Yes.
And that's kind of, I mean, Ovi is, you know, he obviously a great goal scorer and really a power play specialist. I was really happy about the way things were going this year as far as Matthews scoring in the first period and opening goals. And I did the research for the game last night, and the 176 goals that he has scored, he had scored in four consecutive games the first goal of the hockey game. In his first season, he scored 14 first goals of the hockey game. In his career, he has scored 30. That's
wow.
A remarkable number. And in that time period, I believe he's second or third in that department. When he has he scored the first goal of the hockey game, he's also scored 48 times in the first period. And also, he has scored 67 times to give the Leafs the lead. Not the winning goal necessarily, although some were, but it's the importance of the goals that he scores. And when he scores, this isn't the guy kind of cleaning up in a 7-2 win with a nice empty netter or potter or whatever. These are goals that are coming in critical stages of hockey games. And that's a tremendous, it's not a skill, I guess it's a mental approach or something, but it is timely and really something that I find very remarkable as far as this young man.
Are you surprised at all at the fit that Jumbo adds to that line?
I was. And the first couple of games, I thought, no, not sure. And when Thornton came back from the injury, it was like night and day. And it really does look like Joe Thornton has found the fountain of youth a little bit with the kids. And obviously the kids love Grandpa. And they are playing very well with him. They have learned what he does well, back of the net, size, checking the puck, find some open space. He's a great passer of the puck. And I think that has really developed into some chemistry. And I really hope that Joe can stay healthy here for a stretch of time, because that line was just dynamite through the course of time when he was back after his first injury.
I wonder what your thoughts are, Joe. I mean, you're up there calling Matthews and Marner. The Leafs finally have that deadly duo that always was on the visiting team, or when you were on the road, you know, the Pittsburgh duo. Go through the whole list. Washington, over the years, Gretzky, whatever. I mean, there's always that guy and his entourage that came to Toronto and either lit up the Leafs or you regretted that he wasn't a Maple Leaf. You don't have to feel that anymore.
No, you kind of enjoy it, and you realize that given an opportunity, these guys are going to score. It was disappointing on Monday night when they had 7 power play opportunities that didn't score, because you really think that with man advantage, it's a special team. They move the puck so well. They find open spaces. But not having Thornton and not having Simmons will detract, because they don't have now 2 real good units, 1 and 1A, so to speak. So having said that, teams maybe shut them down a little bit until these guys get back. But it is interesting that they have that 1-2 punch. And if they could get Tavares and Nylander going a little bit on the second line, this team would be just unstoppable. And it would be and it still is, because you know those guys are going to come out of it. But it's a matchup nightmare for coaches coming in as to what defense pair and what line do you want out against these guys.
Well, and that's the other duo. So Tavares and Nylander have struggled in their own, like, individually and collectively. What's your read on what's happening there?
And Sheldon Keefe has tried putting different people there to try and get it going and things of that nature. I really don't know, Jimmy, why it hasn't clicked. And, you know, it may be not having Simmons available there that would give them a little more presence. They've moved Hyman there, who usually really ignites a line because of his physical play. But they have to be in a situation. I find they turn the puck over too much. Mm-hmm. And they shoot themselves in the foot maybe by not simplifying their game by just getting the thing to the net. And I think that's something that I think that they have to work on. You can't pass the puck into the goal. You got to get someone to shoot it. And they, at this particular point, are having some difficulty. It was interesting that they put Tavares up on the line with Matthews and Marner to start the game against Calgary because of the injuries. And that didn't work out, and they quickly went back to doing things after that. So it's just going to take time. It's going to take one of those games where it goes in off your skate or goes in off your rump a couple of times, and all of a sudden you've got 2 on the game, and all of a sudden those hands that seem to be encased in cement are going to all of a sudden feel a lot lighter.
Last minute of play in this podcast.
Thank you, Mike Ross, PA announcer at Scotiabank Arena, to let us know there's less than a minute to go. So time now for the Yes Guy, No Guy Awards. Heavy on the No Guy, Nylander. 5 giveaways in the game on Monday night, so he gets a No Guy. A No Guy to Ilya Mikheyev. He had 2 breakaway shorthanded, same move, didn't score, and on one of them, the Flames went down and scored on their power play. So unfortunately for Mikheyev, we have to saddle him with a No Guy. Another No Guy to John Tavares, who had the opportunity to play with Matthews and Marner, and it didn't work out. And John is the Leaf captain and is expected to deliver more, and I'm sure he will going forward. But last night and the games that led up to it are definitely a No Guy for him. We end on a Yes Guy to the Leafs, who have played 20 games and have only 4 regulation losses. That is an emphatic Yes Guy. Hope you enjoyed episode 13. Hope you come back Friday for episode 14.